bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook. And then there were four teams vying for the national championship in college basketball in New Orleans. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider. But before we kick things off, I want to remind you about all of FanDuel Sportsbook's great promotions. A brand new $150 instant bonus for new customers. Use the promo code BETTHEBOARD. You'll sign up for FanDuel Sportsbook, make a deposit of at least $10, place your first bet. Minimal stakes for some of those folks out there, don't want to put too much skin in the game. Get your sportsbook site credit bonus for $150 upon placement. FanDuel has you covered for the national championship and deep into the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs. And Payne, I'm going to do a good yeoman's work today, and we're not going to talk about the National Football League, but did want to get your takeaway from what you saw last weekend in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight.
Well, the first question is, we're recording on Thursday, so I'm going off topic already. What was going on yesterday? Where were you?
What do you mean, where was
I? Big plans?
What do you mean?
What happened?
What do you mean, where was I yesterday? I was around.
I figured you were busy. Nowhere to be found. And then the Deshaun Watson deposition tapes leak. Were you part of that?
I was not part of that any more than I was privy to the Bruce Arians retirement that we know is carefully orchestrated by the Brady camp.
I have no idea about that. None whatsoever. Deserves it, though, if Brady is behind that. Okay. Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. You know, we have four really good teams. And I think we'll talk about some of the matchups, obviously, in the two games here. But sad to see Houston go down. They won their style of game against Arizona. And then, you know, Villanova did a pretty good job of keeping them out of transition, keeping them off the offensive glass in the first half. And then ultimately, when you shoot 1-for-20 from three and your opponent is perfect from the free throw line, 15-for-15, it's going to be tough to win games like that. We ultimately saw on the other side of the bracket what happens when undeserving teams advance and it winds up in blowouts. And that was the one thing. The St. Peter story is fantastic. It's great. But the first three games they played, you lost by an average of 9 points per game in the advanced box score. And odds makers didn't really know how to react. So you got a very short price on UNC at open at 7.5. And a lot of pros laid that. And that's why you saw that game creep out to 8.5. And it was over by the first TV timeout. Up top, Gonzaga goes down. I know John is pounding his chest about that, send us a nice little DM. But, you know, again, these games, and I keep preaching this, it's like a ton of variance in college basketball, a ton of variance this time of year. When you go into that advanced box score, you see a Gonzaga team that beat Arkansas by double digits. And they not only beat Gonzaga by Arkansas by double digits, but they did so despite guys dressed as zoo animals making $319 to referee that game, sending the number one pick to the bench with 8 minutes to go in the first half, and then again in the second half with 5 minutes to go. And Gonzaga missed a slew of wide open threes. Nemhard was not good, and we'll just put that very nicely. Missed a ton of layups and bunnies in the first half. So what ends up happening in the second half? They use him in pick and roll situations. And as soon as he gets by the player being picked, he's not attacking the helper. He's not even looking to shoot at that point. And so the pick and roll is deemed useless by Gonzaga when Nemhard was running it in the second half. And then you get a Duke team against an undeserving Arkansas team. Just basically bury him. They fell asleep at the wheel and it turned into a 5-point game late. But you know, then they stepped back on the gas after the timeout and they went to Bancaro in the post. And I think they scored seven points off three straight post-ups to Bankera, and the game was over again. So we kind of got what we got. I mean, Kansas was good in the second half against a double-digit seed. We said that was the worst region of the entire tournament, and it was. So nothing too crazy. We kind of got what we got in that round.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that stood out to me was the rash of poor shooting or good defense, I guess, depending on how you want to try and spin it. 12 games played between Thursday and Sunday. If you blindly bet the unders, you posted a record of 11-1 for the full game, 11-1 for the first half. We'll see if we get a little better offense on display with the two games coming on Saturday from New Orleans. We talk about all the time some of the cavernous shooting backdrops and a lot of the different dynamics in play. But to your point, and it's something that we've talked about for as long as we've done some of these March Madness podcasts, upsets are great early on, but you do want the power programs to emerge. And we have a star-studded field, to your point, that'll be doing battle. With 61 Final Four appearances between the four remaining programs, 17 combined national titles, and this quartet of teams has combined to win 7 of 13. So without further ado, we get into the early tip-off on Saturday that'll pit Villanova against Kansas. You're looking at Kansas, a 4.5-point favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. Total in the game at 133.5. Nova, of course, the big storyline in this spot, will be playing without Justin Moore. Leads the team in minutes per game at a shade less than 35. His 14.8 points per game were second on the team, rebounding third on the roster. It's not a team for Jay Wright that goes extremely deep by any stretch of the imagination, but they are veteran savvy. Colin Gillespie and Jermaine Samuels, holdovers from the 2018 National Championship team. And Payne, when you're Jay Wright, you figure out ways to be competitive regardless of what horses you're bringing to the dance. And Jay Wright's had Bill Self's number, 7-1 against the spread in 8 previous meetings, has gone 5-3 straight up. If you're Nova, how do you go about trying to scheme to slow down Kansas? Or do we just assume this is going to turn into yet another rock fight where Nova's got to keep the game to 65 or less?
Not surprising that those are the records head-to-head. Jay Wright is certainly the more savvy schematical coach, so that does not surprise me. Here's let's kind of like think about these games, how they got here, price points, and then we can kind of dig into some of these matchups. And the one thing that I have had constant trouble with is Kansas this season, because it feels like they're playing like their best basketball right now, and you have Remy Martin, who's just gone to a different level, right? He feels like he is just fully acclimated to Bill Self's system, and then obviously, there is this transition with life off the court when you go from Los Angeles to Kansas. So this, what he's doing right now is clearly taking Kansas to a little bit of a different level, especially on offense. Does have some trouble defensively, but if you just look, Remy Martin's in the game, Kansas averages 3.5 points more per 100 possessions. But I just don't get the vibe. This is your typical like one seed Kansas team with Bill Self that's just like loaded to the gills with talent. It's just not. And if you look at who Kansas has beat to get here, nothing really good, right? It's just, it's not very good teams. We talked about the Midwest and how that was the softest region by far. Only 5 teams power rated in our top 40. Every other region had 10. Okay. And so you just look at this path. It's like Texas Southern power rated outside our top 200. It's Creighton without Kalkbrenner and Nemhard, right? And then you get Creighton, and that game, what, is steamed out from like 9.5 to 13. One of the most recognizable gambling names ever is willing to lay 12 once the limits increased. Still don't cover, right? You beat Providence, a team we had power rated outside the top 40. They failed to meet an odds maker expectation in that game. And then you play the best 20 minutes of the season against a double-digit seed in Miami. And that's kind of how you're here. When I look at this and I looked at our numbers pre-tournament versus what we made them now, pre-tournament, Kansas is -1. Obviously, the Justin Moore injury, which you mentioned, is causing some of this. He's out with a torn Achilles. I don't understand how that wasn't obvious in the moment it happened or an hour after it happened, but it apparently wasn't that obvious because oddsmakers did open this a little bit higher than it should. But then suddenly when the Moore injury became official on the screen Monday, the line moved again. I don't understand how that happened. There's this little battle, I think, with Justin Moore in that we know he's not worth the 3 or 4 points. This line has kind of adjusted through the 2 and 3 specifically, like just way more valuable points than their number indicates. Not in like a million years is he worth 3 or 4 points through those numbers. If you look at his personal player efficiency ranking and you just take his defensive rating from his offensive rating and you look at his net, he's actually one of the worst players on Villanova. However, we know that's not really the case, and chemistry is key. And when you're playing within a Jay Wright system, it's important to have that chemistry. And I look right now, 4 of the most efficient 5-man lineups Villanova has played this season with more than 60 possessions all feature Justin Moore. And the one lineup that's been featured the most this season without Justin Moore, Villanova's minus 15 net points per 100 possessions. So it's like we understand he's hugely valuable. But in terms of like this spread perspective, he's still not worth 3 or 4 points, I don't think. So I don't know. I don't really know what we get from Villanova. They just aren't overly impressive to me. They've won ugly all season. I really like their ability to be mentally tough, and they make free throws late in games, and that's why Nova's here. You could say if Hunter Dickinson made bunnies, Nova's probably bounced, right? And surely when you look at the Houston game, it's 42-40 with 5 minutes to go. It's likely a loss if Houston isn't 1-for-20 from three. And again, it's just that one game basketball variance at its finest. And so here we are. Now, give Villanova credit, right? They were great defensively against Houston. Jay Wright was fantastic devising the game plan, and Nova did a really good job getting back in transition. They did a very good job creating a stalemate on the offensive boards in the first half. But even a bad shooting night for Houston, if they go 4-for-20 or 5-for-20, Villanova probably isn't here. So, I mean, I don't know how you view Villanova, these teams, but you know, before we get into matchups, that's kind of my vibe on why this line is where it is and probably why there's going to be some value on Villanova at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a fair assessment. I mean, to your point, when you look at Kansas, it was a team that was down 6 at the break to Miami before they blitzed them in the second half to the tune of 47-15. How differently that game looks now than what it did, you know, when they went into the break before Bill Self made some adjustments and completely clamped down on the Hurricanes perimeter game. And to further your point, I mean, Kansas over the last 2 games, in the round of 16 and the round of 8, has played 4 halves of basketball. In 2 of those 4 halves, they've held their opponents to 19 points or less. Yes, the Jayhawks defense deserves some credit for that. At the same time, this still is 2022 in college basketball. When teams are doing that, it's a combination of good defense and atrocious offense. For Providence not having any wrinkles and yet still being able to cover, given how poorly they played in the first half, and you look at Miami. So you wonder if Villanova is going to get completely stymied. I think if Kansas has their way, they're going to try and push pace. They'll try and push tempo. And to your point, when you look at Villanova's overall metrics, and these are more just surface-level depth, you're talking about a Nova team that shot 44% or worse from the floor in each of their last 3 games. To their credit, they have held opponents to almost 10 points per game below season averages in the tournament, and they don't turn it over where they're fundamentally sound, as you alluded to. So somewhere you're going to have to go out there and make plays, and I have to imagine against the Kansas team that doesn't have any surefire NBA players, there are still guys that can make shots. And if you're Villanova, you have to be a little bit more concerned that Obagi finally got going for the Jayhawks, since he was completely irrelevant for the first 3 games, letting Remy Martin carry the water for everything this team was doing offensively.
There's a couple key things in this game. And the first is similar to Houston and Arizona in the Sweet 16, where we kind of, you know, mentioned the correlated parlay of Houston and under because of these contrasting styles. We're going to see something very similar here. If you like Kansas, it's probably an over game. If you like Villanova, it's got to be an under game based on that drastic difference in play, where you look at Nova, 345th in pace, they're 350th in possession length. So not only does Villanova not push the tempo, they also make you defend the entire shot clock. Kansas, the complete opposite, top 60 in both pace and possession length. When you look at the season-long metrics, Villanova really isn't great getting back on defense. Almost 29% of their opponent's shots against Nova were in transition. But Nova, I thought, did a great job in the most recent game against Houston. I mentioned just being, you know, getting back on defense, making sure those transition shots from Houston were really inefficient. And now you have Jay Wright, with an entire week to prepare for one opponent, you know, getting back on defense and slowing the game down to like this absolute halt on offense is probably what he's going to go with to combat depth issues, whether it's fatigue or fouls. I think that's pretty vital for Nova. Offensively, for Villanova, it comes down to Colin Gillespie, right? Being able to operate the offense, post up two smaller guards. Remy Martin is a defensive liability a little bit on that end of the court. Can you put a guy like David McCormick in conflict like they did with Hunter Dickinson and get McCormick defending ball screens further away from the hoop? And when he gets switched on Jalen Samuels or Dixon, but specifically Samuels, Samuels has got to win that matchup every single time when McCormick's playing away from the rim. On the other end, it's pretty simple. You know, you have McCormick, you have Lightfoot, you have Jalen Wilson. You mentioned Agbaji. Those guys in the paint, those guys driving to the rim, you start to wonder if Nova has the size to defend the paint and the rim. Kansas is top 20 in the country in both near proximity attempts and efficiency. I'm worried about Nova getting beat up on the glass as well. Outside the top 200 in defensive rebounding, top 40 in offensive rebounding, and top 20 in second chance conversion points for Kansas. So I know Nova did really well on the glass in the first half against Houston, struggled mightily in the second half, and that's how Houston got back in it. Now, we know Nova has the versatility defensively. Because they play small, right? They can switch everything. They have all these interchangeable parts. But when you look at how Kansas is kind of set up in Bill Self's offensive system, we'll call it that, right? They do play a lot of one-on-one ball, and that's where Remy Martin just been absolutely lights out in this tournament. He's one of the best one-on-one offensive players, and that is why he won Midwest Player of the Tournament. But this comes down to what type of game it is, because if this is a 50-possession type game, Villanova plus five is way too much. And we kind of saw bettors over the last like 24 hours get an itchy trigger finger here and removed the few fives that did pop, even grabbed some 4.5. Still plenty of 4.5 out there, but now some of the sharper shops, Todd, down to 4.
It's one of the things that, you know, good teams do, and Jay Wright is a master in terms of just turning these games into absolute rock fights. Obviously, it was one that Houston was more than willing to try and engage with Villanova, but you look back at the way Nova played not only in this tournament, but even in the Big East Conference Tournament Championship. I mean, they turned that game into an absolute slog against Creighton, a 54-48 win, and against a team that likes to get out and really push tempo in St. John's as well. I mean, they were able to just take the air out of the ball and keep it in that 60 to 62 possession range. We'll see if they can slow it down even further. And to your point, when you're playing within a bucket or two, you're able to do that. What happens if Nova finds themselves down 6 or 8 points? This game could get away from them in a hurry if they find themselves extremely limited in the offensive end. If that game is the appetizer with two teams that have a lot to be proud of with their rich basketball traditions, what we'll get in the nightcap is something that I think North Carolina and Duke fans have been waiting for through 257 previous meetings. For the first time ever, North Carolina and Duke will do battle on one of the grandest stages in college basketball. And when you look at it, it's actually the first time where conference rivals will meet in the Final Four since 2016, when it was North Carolina involved against your beloved Syracuse Orange. North Carolina looking to tie Villanova back in 1985 for the lowest seed to win a national title at an 8. You have to give North Carolina a ton of credit. The last four times they've caught points, they've won those games straight up. And you're looking at Duke, a 4-point favorite in this matchup. Total 151 at FanDuel Sportsbook. Payne, there's so many different ways to go in this, from narrative to X's and O's to the number. I feel like the number might be the best place to start, given the last time we saw these two teams on the same floor together was in the regular season finale. Now, it was a Duke home game at Cameron, but Duke closed an 11.5-point favorite. Here we are on neutral court and more than a 7-point adjustment.
And it was like 3.5 the first game. And so that's a really good place to start, because if you look where odds makers set those two prior meetings, it would indicate this line should be more like 6-7. Now, if you look at the advanced box scores of the actual two games and you factor in shot quality, North Carolina is a +7 total points in the two meetings combined. So it is interesting from that perspective. We did see early money come in on North Carolina +4.5. It would appear at this point recreational money is going to come in on UNC in droves come game day. This is really tricky, because both teams seem to be improving at a rapid pace, And when you get that much forward momentum in a short period, it takes some real effort deciphering current form from reality. And that task is like really, really difficult when that happens. I just, you know, if you look at full season metrics, like North Carolina came into this tournament outside the top 20 in our power rankings. But if you look since February 27th, we have them power rated number one. And Duke came into this tournament over their final 10 games ranked 166th in adjusted defensive efficiency. Now, all of a sudden, of the four remaining teams, Duke has the best adjusted points per possession allowed defensively. Okay, and we know what they're doing offensively. So it's like it's really difficult to kind of hammer this thing down, and you'll see why there's some probably varying opinions amongst pro bettors on this game. We know a little early North Carolina money. I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a different vibe if this somehow gets to three. You kind of look at some of these performances too. You know, both teams have been fantastic, but they've also shown vulnerability right in this tournament. I mean, again, Duke's down five to a bad Sparty team with 5 minutes to play. Texas Tech held the largest lead of the game. Tech led at halftime. And despite Duke shooting 72% in the second half against the most efficient defense in the country, Duke's still trailing Texas Tech by a possession with under 3 minutes to play. UCLA could have easily beat North Carolina. We saw UCLA build an 8-point lead in the first half. They rebuilt a 5-point lead in the second half, all without two of their better players at 100%. And it takes a streaky Caleb Love to score 27 in the second half to beat UCLA. So it's difficult to assess. Now, obviously, UNC looked great against Marquette. You build a 25-point lead, even if Baylor is undermanned, it's still very impressive. But both of those teams might not be here if they didn't finish the end game. And so they're not completely like away from potentially playing like really badly. I just, this tournament, and this is one thing I said to you, I think throughout the course of this entire season, right at the beginning of the year, middle of the season, pre-conference tournaments, pre-tournament, like who's good? Like who's the team, right? Like no one is great this year for me, just what I have seen. Everyone has some holes. So when I look at this game in general and I just start thinking about some of the matchups, it seems pretty easy to me that there's going to be a ton of variance, right? It's like, can Leaky Black be a monster defending Ben Caro and Griffin? Can he just like remove one of those two guys? When UNC won in Cameron, Leaky Black held Ben Caro to a 90 offensive rating. It was his worst performance since February 27th. And then if you can remove Ben Caro and Griffin doesn't shoot as well as he's been shooting in this tournament, then you have a chance, right? And then you look like, can Baycott stay out of foul trouble? Because we know Duke likes to attack the basket. If you look at Duke, 13th in near proximity shot attempts. And if Baycott's in foul trouble, not good, right? Because it's just going to be a layup drill at that point. Top five in near proximity efficiency for Duke. The way Duke's offense is trending, it's quite literally off the charts good. It's now the most efficient offense in college basketball season long. And if you look at their trending stuff, like almost averaging like 1.5 points per possession. It's like out of this world good. But part of UNC's improvement has come on defense. Top five in defensive efficiency since February 27th. So you're getting some things here that are like both teams are just trending at a rate that simply isn't sustainable in my mind. It's like which one in this one game setting is suddenly going to maybe revert back to its old self. The other thing here is like Caleb Love, what are you getting? Super duper streaky. So difficult to assess a team when its lead guard is that up and down, right? Again, like Love has to knock down two late shots against UCLA, has a 136 offensive rating in that game, but then you go back to his streakiness and it's like he had a 50 offensive rating against Baylor, 88 against St. Peter's. Which Duke defense are you going to get, right? The one that's like atrocious defending ball screens in pick and roll situations, or do we get the defense that has the most talented players in the country that became willing to be better one-on-one defenders in this tournament? Like Hubert Davis isn't some brilliant offensive mind that's going to be drawing up a Princeton's offense here in 4 or 5 days and going to shred these guys to pieces, right? It's just not who he is.
Hey, if I see North Carolina on their opening possession run a backdoor cut, you're getting a text message immediately.
And like, you know, listen, Coach K deserves all the credit in the world, you know, especially if he wins one on the way out. Now, he has kind of transformed his beliefs, and he was forced to, you know, after you have some disappointing tournament losses. But he's got the best players. We've seen some things, right? Tech jumps out to a 10-2 lead. Coach K calls timeout, whatever he says in the huddle. Duke comes out, looks like a different team. At the 13-minute mark of the second half, when Texas Tech is up 6, he goes zone. And for 2 possessions, he stifles them. And then Adams calls a timeout, draws up some stuff, and Tech is uber efficient against the zone. And then finally, with 2 minutes to go in that game, the players for Duke are like, we got to go back to man. We'll buy in. Like, we'll defend these guys. And they did. So it's like, yes, Coach K is doing some things, but, you know, is a zone going to work against UNC? Probably not the way they're shooting the ball right now. Are you going to make that adjustment? So I think it comes down to, like, will Duke's horses on offense be able to score? I do think so. Are they going to defend at the rate they've defended the last few games? I don't know if that's possible, right? Like, Arkansas isn't really efficient in the half court. Texas Tech isn't the most efficient offense. We know that. So obviously their improvement that I've mentioned defensively is schedule adjusted. But yeah, you know, I'd prefer the ability to lay 3 with Duke before taking 4 with North Carolina, I feel like. And let's see if that ultimately gets here. I know you have a little bit more of a feeling on this game than I have.
No, I mean, I would say that when I look at this game, I think 4, 4.5 did feel a little bit light in Duke's favor. But you raise excellent points talking about the Blue Devils and what you're going to get from them on the defensive side. I mean, we've seen them for 4 to 6 minute stretches fully commit. Now, is this the game of all games where for 40 minutes we get Duke and essentially what amounts to a starting lineup of all NBA players committing on both ends of the court? I kind of said jokingly, and you hate to fall victim to narrative, but I think it's worth saying, it's rare in life that you get a mulligan, a chance to do over and atone for things you did wrong. Duke couldn't ask for a better opponent here, not necessarily because I'm implying that North Carolina is weak, but they were called out by their head coach in the wake of ruining his day at Cameron Indoor. Basically, Coach K apologized for how bad Duke was. Here Duke is, you have their full attention, and it's not going to be Duke, and I'm not saying it necessarily was the case in the second half where they were looking past their in-state rival, but if North Carolina thinks that's the kind of Duke effort they're going to get in this spot, they're going to be sorely mistaken. But you do wonder on this stage which team embraces the bright lights, which team can get some of those easy looks on the inside, knowing that that cavernous shooting backdrop could be a little bit problematic. And I asked you this to kind of pivot back. If you trust one of these two head coaches to be able to make adjustments, to make changes on the fly, I don't think either one of them, and this may surprise folks, is going to wow you with some of their X's and O's situations. But this may be one of the rare teams in this, other than Bill Self, we're not going up against Jay Wright, where you actually give Coach K a slight edge if he's got to make tweaks at halftime or adjustments against Hubert Davis.
Yeah, and he certainly has the staff to assist in that as well, right? Like, you can see John Shires taking a little bit of a larger role just in some of the timeout stuff. I also think one thing that we have seen down the stretch of these games where Duke might not be the better team for the first 35 minutes, all of a sudden you have 4 NBA guys, 5 NBA guys, and it's crunch time. And it's like, in a tight contested game, who do you want to go get that basket? And that's really where Duke's won some of these games. They're very difficult to defend. I will say this, and it's a very much narrative based, but to this point, we really haven't seen the Coach K tour become a hindrance to the younger players. But you do wonder, now that they're in the Final Four setting, a stage larger than they've ever been on, with not just a championship at risk, but sending out Coach K the right way, and you have Ben Caro yelling out he's the GOAT in the presser, you do wonder if that causes some clam up. Because North Carolina, to me, is kind of playing with house money here, and you hate to say it, right? It's a blue blood.
Yeah,
there's a championship on the line, but 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, no one expected North Carolina to be in this spot.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because you do wonder when you watch Coach K's body language in the wake of that comeback against Michigan State. It was almost like, all right, this isn't going to be a full-blown disappointment. We're going to get to the second weekend. And Duke never appeared rattled. I mean, even when they got down against Texas Tech in the pressure-packed moments, I mean, they didn't miss a single field goal over the final 8 minutes. You look at the game against Arkansas, I don't think they were ever really tested by the Razorbacks. And you have to imagine that, all right, maybe the worst is behind them. This team realizes what they can accomplish in front of them. Just a fascinating game from so many different angles when you look at it. And we know that Coach K is arguably one of the most polarizing head coaches in all of college basketball. So you're going to get people that are drawing a full-blown line of demarcation in the sand, not looking at it from a basketball standpoint. But hey, I'm either for Duke or I'm against them, and that's how I'm going to go in and bet it. And I think early on, and we'll of course talk to John in a few minutes, curious to see what they say, but the books that I've spoken to out here, Payne, I was blown away. 6 out of every 10 tickets they're saying early on from recreational bettors are coming in on North Carolina catching the points.
Yeah, that is a little surprising to me, but kind of back to your point, obviously Coach K is very polarizing and Duke is very polarizing, so you either love or hate him and that school. But at this point, like, you have to give him credit, right? Like, I don't know if he's the Belichick of college basketball, but if he wins a championship here, that's just another notch on the belt. And obviously, you know, we get to these points where coaching certainly matters, and we can kind of see what you're doing out of timeouts. We can see what you're doing game plan wise. We can see the adjustments you're making at halftime. And certainly Coach K isn't the best at those things at this juncture in his career. But at the same time, for everyone like yelling and screaming, I love to see the old Yale offense here, there is not an ability for one-and-done players to be taught that. You run that stuff because you're recruiting guys that are going to be at your school for 3 and 4, and even in over the last few years, five seasons, right? Your ability to kind of run this perfect offense that everybody would love to see, or at least the naysayers would love to see from Duke, like, just isn't a thing. And so it's never going to look that picture perfect pretty. And so you have to be able to be cognizant enough to understand that, right? That we're not going to take like Griffin and Ben Caro and just like teach them the Princeton offense in 3 months. It's just not going to happen.
Nope. You give the ball to your best players. You roll the ball out there and tell them to go make shots on the biggest stage. And we'll see exactly which of these four teams find a way to ultimately cut down the nets on Monday night. You've heard enough from us breaking down a tandem of big games. Time to get a fresh perspective on exactly what we may see unfold in the Final Four. He's joined us throughout the course of the NCAA tournament. You, of course, can follow John Sheeran on Twitter. That's at jsheeran, S-H-E-E. RAN1981. And John, you know, we were very critical of some of your strong assessments that were anti-Gonzaga going into the round of 16. The floor is yours, my friend, to take that victory lap and tell Payne and I to shove it, along with anybody else that believed this was finally going to be the iteration of Mark Few's bunch that could cut down the nets and win that elusive national title.
Nah, that's not my style, Todd. You throw enough mud, some of it sticks to the wall effectively, and that's all we did. Look, they were, I think, exposed in the game, but yeah, a lot went Arkansas's way, and it's nice to see someone else.
John, because I record this podcast prior to what you thought was recording, that was all recorded. This isn't even recording. Tell us how you really feel about Gonzaga, and specifically Chet Holmgren. Because we're going to have a side bet, it sounds like.
Yeah, look, I'm just not a fan. I think he's obviously a unique specimen, but I think physically he's got big issues. I thought he got bullied in a lot of the game. It put him off his game. I didn't think he shot the ball very well at all. And sure, you can talk about his ability at that size to be able to handle the basketball, but if that is an issue in the college sphere, then I can only imagine what the NBA, his NBA peers will do to him when he gets in there. So unless he can find 60 or 80 pounds in a few months' time, I think he'll be in big trouble.
You figure we'll pack it down, a little fish and chips, a little pasta, meatballs. Between the two of you guys as a nutritionist, Chet Holmgren will come rolling into his NBA season about 50, 60 pounds heavier. He'll be an absolute force in the paint.
He could fix it with my diet.
We'll just get him on the Bryson DeChambeau diet.
There you go.
Yeah, I think they test for that kind of thing in the National Basketball Association, but that's a different discussion for a different day. John, with Gonzaga going down, how does your future book look with the four remaining teams, knowing that they're blue bloods? We talked about the first podcast earlier. I know it circulated through social media that you guys took some pretty big bets on both Kansas and Duke leading up to the first game of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that's been exactly it. Nostradamus wouldn't have predicted this last four in the same way that that better did. We took some pretty hefty bets, I think North Carolina, Duke in particular. There was also a follow-up bet on Villanova. So right now, the only winner left in the four that we have is Kansas. So we're not that high on them, though, so expect that customer to be walking away with a nice profit. And if it's either North Carolina or Duke, we're talking in the realms of $10 million loss for us on the tournament outright. So a pretty hard one to take, but overall, the tournament's been amazing. Handle's been, you know, through the roof. I look back at last Sunday and see the St. Peter's game without the ability to be able to wager on it in New Jersey was double the highest turnover NBA game on that day. So a huge demand, a huge event, and looking forward to seeing the last weekend of it.
You know, when you talk about Handle, and I'll let Payne ask the hard-hitting questions about what you guys have seen for the two games as far as sharp action and such, but for a game like North Carolina and Duke, Saturday in prime time, it's the second game of the day. How does it compare, at least as the way you guys are forecasting, compared to a marquee NBA game like we saw last night between, say, the Golden State Warriors and the Phoenix Suns that's on national television with some of the preeminent teams in the association, or maybe even the Miami Heat-Boston Celtics game that preceded it?
Yeah, I mean, it's bigger. It's almost double, I think, is what we're seeing. Like, the numbers we have already for these games this weekend are really, really big. And I think I alluded to it last week, certainly a couple of days out, even bigger than NFL games in the middle of football season. So March Madness is right at the top in terms of importance of an event for us over the month, and the ability to be able to, you know, continually drive volume, expand on the product, innovate over the next year or so. We have that new model that I alluded to this year, and we'll have a better version of that for next year. And I think it's only onwards and upwards for the collegiate sports, and particularly the high profile events like football playoff season and March Madness.
John, I asked you on the opening round podcast, I'll put your feet to the fire again here now that you have a little bit more data, and how much money do you think you guys are going to take on March Madness as a whole? Our listeners like that big round number. It's juicy.
I don't have the number, and I can easily get it, but I think the first round was twice as big as the Super Bowl in terms of handle. Like, that's how much demand there is there for the tournament. Like I said, I think something in the realms of $16 million in handle for the St. Peter's game without the ability to be able to bet on that in its own state.
That's absolutely insane.
So, yeah, you're talking huge, huge numbers on these games. I think we have, you know, probably $2 million in handle on some of these the weekend's games already.
Have you guys seen an uptick this week in terms of player props? I mean, I know there's different ways to attack these markets, and certainly some people are still entering some of the futures markets with four teams remaining, but sometimes kind of pulling out a specific player to score the most points for the remainder of the Final Four, be the most valuable player in the Final Four, whereas opposed to taking someone like Duke on the futures price at like +150, you can get Banchero at 3-1 some places to be the MVP of the Final Four. Have you seen an uptick in action at all this week in terms of player props?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's expressed in the exact manner that you mentioned. We talk about it all the time on the money line in the Super Bowl and the quarterback and the correlation between those two things and how you can often get a lot of value, particularly when it comes to the more explosive quarterbacks because the correlation is so high. And certainly people are targeting us on those spots. There's also room for us, more room for us to make slight errors there and offer people a bit of closing line value on top of that added correlation that I alluded to. So there's certainly been a lot of demand for player-related markets, not just the futures, but also the player statistics in the game. And we've seen decent interest already in rebounds and points already at this stage for both of the weekend's games.
Makes complete sense. And when we talk about both those games, have you seen anything on either that is sharp side or total, or something that you think that you're going to be have a ton of liability on that you'll be rooting for potentially?
Not really. I mean, the lines really haven't fluctuated that much. The guys have a pretty solid opinion on the teams. Obviously, at this stage, I think Kansas not really that high on. So I think in our futures, you'll probably see a slightly favored Duke in against the market. Volume's been high, though. Pretty good spread so far. North Carolina probably been the most popular one, about a ratio of 2-1 in terms of tickets that we've written on the money line for that. But getting enough two-way action, I think, on both games for neither of them in isolation to be that big of a risk or exposure from our perspective, obviously outside of the futures that I mentioned already.
Interesting. We were getting some rumblings that North Carolina may see some increased action from the public come game day. For our loyalist of listeners that listen right away, there is an NIT championship this evening in Madison Square Garden, your backyard. Are you going to the game? And have you seen anything on that between Xavier and Texas A&M?
Am I going to the game? I'm certainly not going to the game. I actually would like to, but not one I get away at home with, unfortunately, this time around. I keep my bullets for the more meaningful ones, and I'm not going to waste one today out of the
chamber.
Can
only win so many wars.
Exactly. Yeah, look, we've seen some sharp money, I think, for Xavier this morning. We're -4. Most of the market is at 4.5. We're getting plenty of A&M action at 4. But I think the information from that wager this morning is probably enough for us to be comfortable there. If you can grab the 4.5 out there with Xavier, I would suggest that's probably the sharpest bet we've seen this week and something you should try and tail if you can get it.
You replying to Clancy's email that he sent.
Makes complete sense. Todd, anything on your end?
No, I mean, I think, hey, look, I mean, there's two marquee games with four of the biggest blue blood programs out there that have showed incredible form. And to hear those numbers, John, that you share, how the NCAA tournament compares to the Super Bowl, just simply staggering on a variety of fronts, speaking to the growth of the sport and how it's an activity, it's more or less that people don't follow for the better part of 4.5 months, yet they all want to be experts and put their money to good work for them. To kind of lay out the sports calendar, you know, when you look at the NCAA tournament culminating, we know we get into the dog days of summer down the road, but the NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, does it, the focus shift in the office for you to primarily football and trying to create a lot of those unique football markets coming up with the draft looming about a month down the road?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different responsibility for different sections of our team, and I think most of the focus is certainly on college basketball right now. The NBA playoffs are a big part, and we've seen the kind of increased desire around the NBA, markets, futures, draft is coming up as well, so there's always something to keep them occupied. Certainly looking at things like season-long win totals for the NFL, and I expect them to be there imminently. So, yeah, can never prioritize NFL enough.
It's simply amazing. I remember when you used to long for the days behind the counter until you got to the Major League Baseball All-Star break, or at least the culmination of some of the spring sports. There was a little bit of downtime. It doesn't appear to be the case in the sports betting industry, especially with the way that we are trending. John, can't thank you enough for your contributions, like we say all the time, not only during the football season, but for stepping in as well throughout the course of the NCAA tournament with these three shows. And I'm going to really put the pressure to you because we're going to do an NFL offseason podcast that we've told our listeners about on May 5th leading up to the Kentucky Derby. But because Payne and I know absolutely nothing except about cleaning shit out of stalls when it comes to the horse races, we may have to make you our horse racing expert to break down the Derby, the Oaks, and maybe try and find a winner or two on the undercard for us that weekend.
Yeah, I'd love that, Todd. I don't keep close enough to it, so I'd love the opportunity to spend some time and have a reason to look through the form book a little bit, and always look forward to the Derby. It's an incredible event and card, so yeah, more than happy to join.
Well, we will hold you to that, and again, you can follow John Sheeran on Twitter. That's at @jsheeran, J-S-H-E-E-R-A-N 1981. John, best of luck this weekend, and enjoy the final three, or I guess four, since Payne threw the NIT in meaningful college basketball games this season.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Looking forward to it.
You know, Payne, of course, we had to give John the opportunity to take the victory lap because he did say, and he was steadfast in his belief, that he was never going to buy into the Gonzaga hype, and some of his pessimism was rewarded a lot earlier than we anticipated. Would it like to see him sweat with some of that futures liability into this coming weekend?
He won't be happy with a Duke-Kansas final. That's for sure. Doesn't sound like,
you know, a couple.
We know those were the two big future bets he took prior to the tournament. So he's going to have a sweat either way. He's going to be rooting for one of the two to lose in the Final Four, and then he's going to be rooting for the other to lose in the championship game.
Everybody wants to make a buck or two, and should be great, but I can't thank John enough for his contribution, stepping in with us for all three college basketball podcasts. We know he's an NFL guy through and through, so taking him out of his comfort zone a little bit, can't thank him enough for all that. But Payne, it almost feels like it becomes a sprint with college basketball compared to the marathon that we go through around these parts with the NFL and college football. But we've come to the part in the show where we try and find the last investable opportunity before we bid a fond farewell to our listeners, before we'll reconvene about a month from now with our NFL offseason podcast. Have you found an opportunity for us to make a few bucks going into the Final Four weekend?
So, first of all, we will be back discussing the wild west of free agency that was the NFL this offseason. We will discuss some of the draft happenings, and we'll sprinkle in a little Kentucky Derby action. So mark your calendars for May 5th. That's a Thursday. We'll be back discussing the NFL and, again, dabble into the Kentucky Derby. In terms of a best bet, I'll be candid, don't have one. Okay, I have not bet anything at this point. It's kind of against my religion to give something out that I haven't bet myself. I will say this, if Duke gets down to three, I'll probably have something on Duke. If Villanova gets back up to five, I will consider them as well, but I have not bet anything yet to this point.
Look at that. Discretion, the better part of valor. I'm sure our listeners are going, what the hell? These guys are punting on the two biggest games of college basketball. But that's what makes us different. As we've told you guys through and through, for those listeners that have been with us from episode one, years back, or maybe this is the first time you're finding the Bet the Board podcast, we're not going to sit here and endorse wagers where we're not heavily invested ourselves. Sometimes the best bets in sports are the bets you don't make at all, because it becomes damn near impossible to outrun the 11-10 just by flipping coins. Any other final words of wisdom, Payne? Life advice you'd like to offer up? TV show recommendations as our listeners try and fill the void before we'll be back with them about a month from now?
Going back to what you said, it's really interesting, because one, there's got to be this compass within you to not give out stuff that you actually haven't bet yourself. And two, we're fully cognizant that more people listen when there is a best bet. And in the content day and age where views equal dollars, we are not just passing on a best bet. Like, we have your best interest involved, right? We're cognizant that this isn't going to get as many views as it would with a best bet. So keeping all of that in context, like, yes, punting, but for your benefit and definitely not ours. And saying that, yes, we both saw a very good movie recently, The Outfit with Mark Rylance. Would highly suggest going out and seeing that. Great actor, fit the role perfectly. Was very surprised. I thought it was going to be good. Far exceeded expectation. I think you agreed with that as well.
Oh, I thought the movie was tremendous. It was slow at points. It had a slow burn to it, but tremendous development. And to your point, the acting was outstanding, and encourage folks who may be so inclined to like some of the good old mob classics of the old days. This is kind of a unique, I don't want to say modern spin on it, but I think you'll like a couple of the wrinkles, the acting and the storylines that they try and flesh out there. So if you're looking for something to do to pass a couple of hours, definitely endorse Payne's recommendation on The Outfit. Want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, to follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You, of course, can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod for all updates. Like Payne said, the plan is to be back with you on May 5th for NFL offseason, a little Kentucky Derby with the Run for the Roses as well. And Payne, we know that John likes to dabble with the horses, and we might have to lure him back onto that particular show to see what kind of changes they've made this offseason for not only the NFL, and if he happens to have a pony worth betting on for that fine couple of days at Churchill Downs.
Love it. Great idea.
So, want to wish all of you guys the best of luck. Thanks again for your continued listenership throughout the NFL college football season and this trio of podcasts that we rattled off for the NCAA tournament. Go to FanDuel Sportsbook. Use the promo code BETTHEBOARD. Take advantage of all the generous offers there, because just because we're not around doesn't mean we know you guys won't be invested in the NBA playoffs, the start of the Major League Baseball season, and everything else in the wagering world. Regardless of which way you go in the Final Four and in the national championship come Monday night, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.